Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Kevin Casey. Welcome to hour number two. I'm your guest anchor on this week's program, and you're going to meet our founder, Carol Marks, in just a moment. She is a champion in the battle against ageism in our society and an expert on upper demographic issues. She recently had a conversation with Lynn Garson, who is an author of a memoir, her latest memoir called Southern Vapors, chronicling her life growing up on West Paces Ferry Road in one of Atlanta's wealthiest sections. We're going to check in with Lynn Garson and her conversation with Carol Marks right now on A Touch of Grey.
Now, first, I've got to ask you about the title of your book. What are vapors, and are southern vapors different from others? I mean, are there northern vapors or
no,
what?
No, I don't think so. It actually is a term that I saw in 19th century literature, maybe even earlier than that, in England, where you would see the woman on the fainting couch with her arm draped weakly over her forehead and, you know, I cannot rise from my bed. And it next showed up, if you remember the character that was Scarlett's friend, Melanie, in Gone with the Wind. She was the kind of southern lady who, it's all too much for me. It's that kind of thing. And no, I don't know that they have that in the north.
Now, you called your home Tara. How was it familiar to that plantation you just mentioned in Gone with the Wind? And what about the servants that you had?
Well, it was similar in that it actually looks like it. The property is still there. It's not in my family anymore. But there's a picture of it on the Southern Vapors website, and it really does look like Tara, magnolia-lined driveway going up to the house with the white columns and, you know, the white painted house and, very, very much like that southern plantation look. And it was, and we're going back to 1953 when I was born, it was 23 and a half acres within the Atlanta city limits. So it was, if not a plantation, it was pretty big. I think you asked about the people who worked on the property. We had, one really memorable character was a lady who came, literally she and her husband lived in a log cabin on the property, and when the prior owner sold it to my parents, they stayed. So they sort of came with the property, and she did laundry, and I remember the old scrub. I don't know if anybody remembers what that is, but where you scrub things in the wash tub on that sort of washboard, you know, she would be down there doing that. And her husband was really old, even when I was first a small child on the property. And he would go with a basket and gather the brown eggs that our chickens laid. So.
Now, did your upbringing result in your feeling that you were entitled to be helped and that other people in your family really were responsible for your well-being?
I think so. I do think so. And that was something that took me years and years to get past, is a sense of entitlement that whatever problems other people went through, they were not for me. And that was not a conscious thought. I just realized many years later that I was not taking responsibility for myself. And in fact, I was avoiding it like the plague, and I had to figure out why. And yes, you're right. That was a lot of the reason why. I'll say it was a lot of the reason. I think another part of the reason was, as it happens from time to time, my father, I was his baby. And he kept me as a baby, and babies aren't responsible for themselves.
Now, you also led an extremely sheltered life. So what were some of the normal things that most kids learn growing up that you never did? And really, that was quite a handicap.
As it turns out, you're right, it was. One thing that comes to mind is once I was taken to downtown Atlanta as a child, because that's where Gone with the Wind was playing. I think I was 8 years old. Other than that, I never set foot in downtown Atlanta, Georgia, although I grew up there. I think the first time I was actually out of college, and a friend got involved with one of these programs where you stand on the street, and at that time you gave away little packs of cigarettes to try to, you know, get people to smoke that brand of cigarettes. And she said, come on, you know, it's a job. First time I had set foot in downtown Atlanta, I was never on a bus until I went away to college. Had never been on a bus other than in London. So what does that tell you?
It tells me a lot.
Yeah.
And that it was very difficult, you know, to see life in such a different way. Now, you've had mental issues for most of your life. You've been in therapy for 30 years. And you checked yourself into 3 different mental institutions. And, boy, you were given so many diagnostic labels. So what were some of them, and what diagnosis did you finally come up with?
Well, let's see. There was bipolar 1, bipolar 2, depression, generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, binge eating disorder, complex post-traumatic stress disorder. I think that about covers it. You know, that, and what's a little bit laughable is I don't think you can have bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. I haven't checked that out, but I don't think you can. I don't think the bipolar diagnosis is correct at all. I am subject to fairly violent mood swings. Whether it rises to the level of a disorder, I don't know. And I don't really go that direction anymore. I just address whatever comes up and don't really worry about a label, because I've pretty much moved through and past needing to look at my life that way.
And, you know, that brings me to talk to you about something that really bothers me. Because in order for physicians and institutions who treat patients with mental illnesses today to get paid by the insurance companies, they must come up with a diagnosis and a code order. And doesn't this cause a rush to judgment that certainly results in inappropriate treatment? And that really bothers me.
Well, I couldn't have put that better, and I wish you would just put that out, you know, on a daily, if not hourly, basis.
Yes.
I totally agree, and that rush to judgment includes over-medication. I think, you know, that's part of what you're alluding to when you say the diagnosis, proper treatment. I can't tell you how many different pills were thrown at me, and at one time I remember being on 4 different, very strong psych meds at one time. And, in fact, I have a friend currently who is on no less than 6 plus Ambien to sleep at night. Now, tell me how that person is going to recover her equilibrium when she's got so much chemical, you know, chemically that's being put into her body, you know, and your body and your mind both are trying to adjust to that. Forget trying to really get to whatever issues are there to look at. So, you know, it's a great shame, because I think it's no malign idea on anybody's part. No one's trying to hurt anyone. In fact, I think the medical community sees people who are in tremendous pain and wants to help, and has also affixed these labels in order to destigmatize it, with the idea that, you know, if you've got a label, it's like cancer. You know, you go to the doctor, you get treated. But the unintended consequences of that are what you've said. It's a rush to judgment. You slap a label on, and you throw some meds at it. And that's very unfortunate.
Now, you finally found a doctor who took you off all your mood-altering drugs. So what cause did that have on you, and wasn't that a great thing for you?
Yes, in fact, it was. But I will also say that I had to get to really with my back to the wall to do that, because I had such a wish and a desire for there to be something to take away the pain. You know, I was very complicit in this whole drug medication search that went on and on and on. It was very hard for me to hear earlier in time that, you know, there might not be any medication that can help you. It took me a while to get to the point where I could accept that. So, you know, I understand that people feel that way, because I felt that way myself. Sometimes that's just the truth.
Now, today, if you were asked about your recovery, can you briefly tell us the things that you have done that have helped you even out your mood swings and be really in a better place?
Oh, absolutely. And it's just critical. I have built a support system that I am religious about it. I have group therapy on Monday night. I have individual on Wednesday and Saturday. And if I'm really having a difficult time, I will add to that and I will go yet another day. I also have a spiritual practice that is a lot of the same principles of acceptance and, you know, the kinds of things that run throughout my belief system, and that's on Sunday. When I'm being good about it, I go to hot yoga, which, you know, I'm not really the exercise queen, but that is also another pillar of my support. And like I said, I'm religious about it. You know, these things are expensive. They interfere with my life. You know, I have to leave work sometimes earlier than I would like to go to therapy. But that's just how it is. If I want to maintain my equilibrium and my balance, which I do, this is what I have to do, because I am still capable of being knocked off of center and subject to very wide mood swings. And this is what I have to do for it not to just be a plunge into the abyss.
Lynn Garson speaking with Carol Marks. If you'd like more information on the book, she's got her website. It's southernvapors.com, just like it's spelled, southernvapors, VAPORS.com. More of A Touch of Gray coming up after this.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Welcome back into A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Kevin Casey with you, and let's get back with our founder, Carol Marks. Recent conversation she had with Dr. Nancy Simpkins. Dr. Simpkins, board-certified internist, over 27 years of experience, talking about heart disease and the doorknob questions. What are the doorknob questions? Stick around. Here's Dr. Nancy Simpkins and Carol Marks.
Now, first, for those who don't know, can you briefly tell our listeners why National Women's Health and Fitness Day is so important and what it's all about.
Sure. Okay, so it all started because women were always playing second fiddle to the idea of fitness and heart health to men, because it always was known that men who stayed in shape could prevent heart disease. And then it was realized through current studies that women who are conscious of fitness, exercise, and diet also prolong their life and prolong the onset of potential heart disease.
Now, Dr. Simkins, one of your biggest concerns has been to raise awareness of the biggest cause of women's death in the United States, heart disease. So what's the percentage of women who die suddenly of coronary disease without having any previous symptoms?
Well, the problem is it's difficult, obviously, to know the exact percentage because all of these things are not determined at autopsy, for instance. You know, we sometimes attribute things that aren't attributed to, but we can honestly say that heart disease is the number one killer of women. And interestingly enough, all of my female patients, if you were to ask them what they're most afraid of, they will say they are afraid of dying of breast cancer. Number one thing. When in actuality, the percentages of women who die from heart disease are about 10 times the amount of people that die from breast cancer. I mean, it's a huge, huge difference.
So it's important that we're correcting that misconception. Now, I understand you have 5 easy-to-do tips that listeners can incorporate into their everyday life that will help prevent heart disease. So can you tell us about a couple of them?
Sure. Okay, number one that we need to do is diet. So the number one easiest thing to do is to simplify. The easy to do tip for your diet is to have a heart healthy diet. That does not mean that you can never eat pizza again. It does not mean you can never have ice cream again. But it means that you have to eat bad things in moderation. And most of your diet, 75% of your diet, has to be healthy, meaning fruits, vegetables, and lean proteins.
So is that what you mean by the 80-20% rule?
That's correct. So we say 20% can be carbohydrates, and remember, fruit is also a carbohydrate. So it's okay that we use fruit as a carbohydrate, and it's okay that once in a while we have a slice of bread. It's okay that we have a piece of pizza or a bite of pie or cake. We just can't have it all the time. It's not healthy for our heart. So the number one thing is really your diet. Number two thing being exercise and fitness. Now, that's really very dependent on an individual. Myself, I work out a tremendous amount. So for my fitness level, I have to keep upping it with additional workouts. For people who have a sedentary lifestyle, I tell them to get a simple, cheap pedometer, put it on their hip, and walk 10,000 steps a day. That's the simplest, easiest, best way to prevent heart disease.
Very good. Now, a vital part of our maintaining our health, of course, involves visiting our doctor, whether it's for our regular annual physical or for a current acute problem. And I bet most patients don't realize how busy today's doctors are. They've got to see more patients than ever. So does that mean you need to be organized and write your questions down? And should you try to prioritize them? I mean, ask your most important questions first or what?
I think that an educated patient is my favorite patient. One who comes in armed with their questions or something that they have read about in the newspaper or heard about on a show like yours or watched on TV. These are people who say, but what about this? Should I be taking a low-dose aspirin? Should I be swimming? Should I worry about my blood pressure? So all of those things help me to focus so that I can best help you. So 100%, you should have your questions. For myself, with my own patients, what I say to them is, I ask the questions first, and anything that I do not cover, there will be plenty of time for you to ask yours.
So that's a very good thing, because that helps to relax your patients.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's very important for once a year for every woman to have a screening electrocardiogram in the doctor's office. It's a simple, inexpensive test, and it yields a great deal of results for us to say, hey, something's different this year than last year. We better check out what's going on with your heart.
Now, what do you think about the idea of bringing a friend with you when you go to the doctor to make sure you've really heard what he or she has said, and you can have some follow-up questions, perhaps, from your friend that you might not have thought about? I know sometimes when I go to the doctor and I hear advice, that's going to be difficult for me to follow. Well, you know what? Sometimes I forget it later on.
I think it's a great idea. I think for a routine physical exam in your doctor's office, it's not necessary if you have the type of relationship with your doctor where you could always call and follow up afterward and you could say, wait, I forgot what you said about my vitamin D dose, or I forgot what you said. So I don't have any problems with them bringing a friend, but I think we usually use a friend when we're going to be discussing a treatment plan option. When I've already made a diagnosis and I say, I want you to come in to discuss your treatment plan, then it's always helpful to have another set of ears.
Absolutely. Now, what kinds of helpful information can our listeners find on your website and blog? And do you want to give your website address?
Sure. The website is nancysimpkinsmd.com. And on the website, you will find a lot of helpful information, the most recent blogs. You will have ties to the practice. You will see a lot of my recent media appearances, which give a lot of very, very helpful information for people.
And is there any other significant women's health issues that can occur with aging that our listeners might not be aware of?
Well, I think the big key to aging in women is the changes that occur in the perimenopausal, menopausal, and postmenopausal woman. So we're talking from age 45, 50, 55, and up. Every time we readjust the estrogen levels in the body and every time they drop significantly, more and more symptoms arise, heart disease, of course, being one of them. Patients having a lot of interesting, unfortunate symptoms that develop postmenopausally, and I think they should all be always discussed with your doctor.
That's Dr. Nancy Simpkins speaking with the host and founder of A Touch of Gray, Ms. Carol Marks. Dr. Simpkins does have a website, and it is as follows, Nancy Simpkins, S-I-M-P-K-I-N-S, MD.com. NancySimpkins.com if you'd like more information on Dr. Simpkins. Brief break. We'll be right back. You are plugged in to A Touch of Gray. This is the talk show for grown-ups.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
This is A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Kevin Casey with you. Baseball fans, you're going to want to stick around here. We're going to be speaking, well, I'm not going to be speaking, but Richard Neer, a member of our Touch of Gray broadcast team, is going to talk with Jamie Moyer. Jamie is one of the very famous pitcher in Major League Ball. He is a couple records for you. The oldest pitcher ever to win a Major League game, former All-Star World Series champ, wrote a book, Just Tell Me I Can't. How Jamie Moyer defied the radar gun and defeated time. That is coming up in just a bit here. Richard Neer going to talk with Jamie Moyer. So that's coming up. Stay tuned. Don't go away. This is A Touch of Gray.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys. Just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com Donorsnext.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
This is A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Kevin Casey, and let's launch right into it. Richard Neer, a member of our Touch of Gray broadcast team, had a recent conversation with Jamie Moyer, the famous Major League Baseball pitcher, now retired. He's got a great book out called Just Tell Me I Can't, How Jamie Moyer Defied the Radar Gun and Defeated Time by Grand Central Publishing. Here's Richard and Jamie Moyer.
A lot of your book is about the power of positive thinking. Now, we've heard that a lot, but Harvey Dorfman had kind of a new approach to that. Tell us a little bit about Mr. Dorfman.
Well, Harvey was, kind of a tell it like it is, throw it out on the table, and kind of challenge you kind of guy. And, he got you to really, understand or try to understand who you were and try to understand what your talents are and to take what you had and better that. And when I say better that, I think as athletes, we all have pretty good skill sets physically, but the mental side is what he really tried to get you to focus on, and it got into your preparation, how you think, how you act, how you speak. For instance, you see a catcher put a curveball sign down, and you go, oh, I hope I don't hang this curveball. Or last time I threw a curveball, I hung it, and the guy hit a home run. It's to take you out of that type of thinking and say, I can do this. I can make this pitch. I'm going to make this pitch. And I think that's where I think a lot of athletes fail. It's because, the mental side is they have a lot of self-doubt. They don't believe in their own abilities. And that comes from, not being able to execute, and from, just not having consistent, results that they want. So it took a lot of time. And actually, I worked on it my whole career. It was something that, that I was kind of turned on to in 1991 after reading his book, The Mental Game of Baseball. And then I had the good fortune of spending 2.5 days with him at his home, and he really got me to understand some of these concepts. And then it was now that I started to understand them, I had to put them to, you know, practical use for myself. How am I going to change my daily thinking, my thought processes, and move forward with this and tie it into baseball? And like I said, from 1991 till 2012, it was a work in progress.
Jamie, do you think that most athletes would be open to a Dorfman who could be considered tough love, could be critical,
yeah,
could tell it like it is?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the athlete who is struggling, I think, would be more open to it than the athlete who is having, you know, say, current success. Because when you're having success, you're more apt, from my experience, you're more apt than not to listen to advice because you think you know how to do it. But my take on it all, after, you know, going through some of this process, is you can always learn. You can always get better. There's always a better way. And it's not that you have to change everything, but what you're trying to do is you're trying to fine-tune things. And that's what I've learned in the game of baseball and in the game of life. You're always fine-tuning things.
Well, and I think a lot of athletes, there is an arrogance about them because they've been successful their whole lives. They've been boosted above the average person their mm-hmm. whole lives in most people's estimation. And in a lot of cases, it's not really earned through thought. It's just their natural skills and their very resistance. And I think sometimes that arrogance is a mask for insecurity.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that. You know, here's a line that, you know, Harvey would use with me. When we fail to learn, we've learned to fail. And think about that. You know, when we fail to learn, we've learned to fail. So, you know, in life, you're always learning. And when you stop learning, you know, you start to get a little stagnant, don't we?
Give us an example of how you took these principles which were applied to baseball and made them principles in terms of running your life.
Well, I think it's with everyday living, it's, you know what, can I do this? You know, there's always question, you know, I mean, or you question yourself, well, I don't know if I can do that, or I don't know if I can be prepared for this, or I'm not sure how to do this. But if you have a plan, I think that's what I try to do on a daily basis, is have a plan. And I had to do the same thing as a pitcher. I had to have a plan going into a game. I'd sit down with my catcher, and I'd say, all right, let's go over the hitters. Now, I took notes on hitters and things like that, but I would also ask the catcher, what are you seeing with particular hitters? And, you know, we would try to create a plan. Well, now, in my everyday life, you know, we have 8 children. When I get up in the morning, you know, it's, all right, I have to get up. We have to get the kids ready for school. I have to get them to school. Is their homework done? You know, during the course of the day, I have things that I need to do. You try to stay with those tasks. And each one is a task. You know, regardless if it's difficult or simple, it's a task. And when you can, you know, complete that task, you move forward.
Jamie, I'm sure there were what I call tip-your-cap situations with you. Tim McCarver uses that all the time. Sometimes mm-hmm. your thought process is correct, you execute the pitch correctly, mm-hmm. and the guy hits it off his toenails and knocks it over mm-hmm. the fence. And what do you do then? How do you square with your thing?
Yeah, that's another great question. For me, is, you know what, he has a bat in his hand, and his goal is to hit that ball. You know, and when somebody does do something well, you know, I don't necessarily outwardly show it, but inside, I see what happened, and I am kind of tipping my hat and say, all right, you got me there, but next time you won't. And, you know, again, and that's where that constant, you know, I have made notation. Now, I made a really good pitch down and away, and he went out and got that pitch and hit it, you know, drove it through the gap in right center field. I'm going to make a notation of that. And the other thing is, you know, you start to know when you start facing these hitters on a yearly basis, you start to know, you know, what they can and what they can't do. And, you know, that might, you know, something, a fluky swing versus a legitimate swing. And, you know, then that's where the cat and mouse game really begins with the pitcher and the hitter.
A lot of coaches will say, you know, you learn more from your failures than from your successes. You learn more from your losses than your wins. How does that square with your philosophy and Dorfman's philosophy?
I totally agree with that. And, you know, for me, I have seen, and even, you know, as a younger player, I did this myself, where if I had a bad day or I had, you know, a failing day or something happened that, you know, wasn't going my way, you know, it was almost the end of the world for me. And I learned that, you know, that's a tool. And I learned to pull something positive. So we'll go back to our last situation we talked about. A guy, you make a really good pitch and the guy gets a hit. Well, I know deep down that I really made a quality pitch. So I have, you know, I have to be, or if, did I make a bad pitch and the guy hit? Well, if I made a bad pitch, it's a no-brainer for me. Yeah, I didn't execute a good pitch. Next time I have to execute a better pitch and he probably won't hit the ball like he did. But if I made that good pitch and he has executed, well, that's what he's supposed to do. So, all right. Now maybe it was the actual pitch that I threw. Maybe it shouldn't have been down and away. Maybe it should have been inside, and maybe it should have been a fastball. So now I'm thinking, like, how did I get to that hitting count, or how did I get, what process took me to that pitch? Maybe I need to change that process. So again, it's you know, being able to analyze but not overanalyze things, and again, just kind of basing it off of gut feelings and what you're actually seeing with your eyes.
Now, you've got a foundation. You mentioned before you had 8 children. Do you have any ambition to get more into baseball again on a coaching level, managerial level, or are you moving on from that and doing other things with your life?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that door is always open. But, you know, I'm not counting on that. You know, I think if I put all my eggs in one basket and it never happened, you know, I'd be kind of sitting with my hands up. So, you know, that door, like you say, is always open. We have a foundation. My wife and I have a foundation called the Moyer Foundation. I'm also going to start a pitching academy called the Moyer Pitching Academy. And really my goal with that is to give back. My goal is to share the knowledge that I have, share the experiences that I have had, and share this great stuff that I got from Harvey Dorfman, and share it with, you know, whether it's professional pitchers, college pitchers, high school pitchers, you know, and give back. To me, that's what's really important, is giving something back to the game of baseball, which, you know, I've had a lot of great experiences and I've been able to take a lot away from.
And I'm sure over time, and Radar Gun is in your the subtitle of your book, You've had to fight so often of people, oh, well, he doesn't throw in the mid-90s. And there are so many young pitchers today you're looking at, and they don't throw in the mid-90s, and yet they still get guys out. And yet, that's what these guys are looking for. And you see time and time again, it just happened with Harvey with the Mets, where, you know, his elbow's gone because he's throwing
right.
hard. So you're starting to wonder if, you know, that's the only way to do it. You got to throw a fastball 95 miles an hour. And you've proven that that's not the case.
Unfortunately, the game has gone to velocity. And I'm not sold on that. You know, when I first signed and got into pro baseball, you know, it wasn't all about velocity. It was about, you know, just doing your job. And it didn't matter how hard you threw, how soft you threw. It was about getting results. And I think at some point in time, baseball will realize this. You know, it's not all, because there's just as many injuries now with guys throwing hard as there were with guys that didn't throw as hard. But it's the bells and whistles. It's what we now put radar guns up in the stands, and you know, people can see velocity and all that, and they kind of ooh and ah over that. But, you know, like you're saying, you know, Matt Harvey's got a great arm, but he's really not helping the club at all right now because, unfortunately, he's hurt. So that's why they call us pitchers, not throwers. You know, if they wanted to call us throwers, everybody would go out there and throw as hard as they could and they wouldn't have any idea where it's going. So, you know, I think it's just a phase that baseball is going through right now. But unfortunately what happens is these kids in high school and college that don't throw 92, 95, 98 miles an hour aren't getting the looks that they once got, because every organization wants the guys that throw as, you know, unbelievably hard, and these guys that don't throw quite as hard but can still pitch and still be effective aren't getting the opportunity. And I, you know, I've had many conversations in recent years that if, you know, somebody like myself or even myself was in the college game, we wouldn't even get a look at today because, you know, we don't throw hard enough.
That's Jamie Moyer speaking with Richard Neer on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. The publishing company is Grand Central Publishing. The book is called Just Tell Me I Can't, How Jamie Moyer Defied the Radar Gun and Defeated Time. Thanks a lot, Richard. We're going to take a brief break, and on our return, it'll be Michael Harrison joining me as we wrap up this hour of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. So stick around, Michael Harrison, your usual anchor, in with me, your guest anchor, and we'll have something for you coming up right after this on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. This is the talk show for grown-ups. Guest anchor Kevin Casey here with you on this week's program. And joining us, if you're with us for the first hour, you heard Michael Harrison, who is usually the anchor of this program, and as you are probably aware, is also the publisher of Talkers Magazine. We were talking about his speech, which he gave recently in Orlando at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention a little more than a week ago. It's called The Radio Show, and in it, Michael talked about a number of the issues facing radio today, what radio needs to do to survive into the foreseeable future. And, Michael, for folks who are with us and we're kind of continuing that conversation, what top of mind, what's the first thing that you can think of that you would like to impart to our listeners that you can pull out of that that video that's on our website at talkers.com from your speech at the NAB?
Well, there were 10 things that I said that radio needs to do, and actually all 10 of them are important. We did them from 10 to 1 because, you know, it's kind of fun to do a countdown, and that's kind of a pop cultural thing to do. And the thing I told the radio broadcasters was keep radio at the forefront of popular culture. I think one of the things that's very interesting, and this is a talk show, but I'm sure the people who listen to this station and listen to talk radio also listen to music radio, is that I believe that for talk radio to really do well in the 21st century, music radio also has to survive. And I think that music radio is in much more danger of falling out of touch with people's interests than talk radio, because I think that music radio has given up its ownership, so to speak, of the music culture to other forms of media. And to exotic, you know, internet, digital kinds of media, whereas talk radio sort of owns news and public affairs and politics. Sports radio sort of owns the culture of sports talk. Music radio really has lost its connection. When we grew up as kids, radio was the place that we learned about music. They call it music discovery, finding new artists, new groups, new songs. DJs played a major role in our lives. They not only told us about the new music, but they also used language and words and hip things that were part of the culture of music. Now we grow up and you listen to music radio. Most of them don't even announce the names of the songs. They don't play a lot of new music. They don't play a wide variety of things. They'll sound pretty similar and kind of disconnected. So I think it's really important for music radio that get personalities back and get disc jockeys back and music directors and get out there and discover new things and take chances. I also encourage radio of all formats to be a hero and to seek the things in the neighborhoods and the communities that are needed, that people need to make their lives better, help people, champion causes, support charities, talk about human interest. And part of that is also be local. Have a local presence. Don't just be national. Don't just have national shows. Have local shows as well. A balance between local and national would make every radio station much more successful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the basic things that I talk about.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people might say, I'll play devil's advocate with you for one quick second here. People say, well, sure, that's easier said than done. How do we accomplish that? What are some of the stumbling blocks, just so that our listeners can understand why an operator might say, well, I'd love to, Michael, but I can't?
Well, one of the biggest stumbling blocks is the thing that I said was number one, and that was radio has got to get out of debt. During the age of consolidation, when big companies started picking up all the small companies and they became bigger and bigger and bigger companies and paying enormous amounts of money to radio stations, they piled up a mountain of debt that now they're stuck with, especially now that radio's future as a medium is in question. The values of these stations have stopped going up. So as a result, they have to spend all their time and their resources in dealing with the debt as opposed to operating the stations.
All right.
So I think the biggest thing that's standing in the way of radio really being good today is the amount of debt it's in, and it has to do something to get out of debt and to reverse that situation.
All right. Michael Harrison, publisher of Talkers Magazine. To catch Michael's video, it is on talkers.com. Talkers.com on that page and every other. Just click on the little TV box that says Talkers TV and check out Michael Harrison. You've been listening to A Touch of Gray. This is the talk show for grown-ups.